Charlie and a few of their friends. Chug a couple beers and talk politics. It's better with your two beers in.
Welcome to Two Beers In, a tipsy political roundtable. I'm Cody Lindquist.
I'm Charlie Todd. We are coming to you immediately following the third presidential debate.
The third and final presidential debate.
We have a wonderful guest tonight, returning champion Sal Gentile from Late Night with Seth Meyers is here. Sal, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
We're great.
I'm exhausted. I'm over this whole election.
Doesn't it feel, in a certain way, there's like a sort of existential dread that we're even at this point, but there's also like incredible relief. I feel in a way relieved.
I will never watch Donald Trump's weird face and tiny eyes and tiny hands for 90 straight minutes again.
Hopefully.
I hope you all picked up my sniffing on that microphone.
We're doing
a ton of cocaine over here.
A couple of program notes up top real quick, which is one, we have a live show on Monday. That's Monday, October 24th. And this is going to be at UCB Theater East in New York City. And it is a stacked panel.
So many pussies to grab.
I'm the only person without a pussy on the panel.
Yes. We have Desi Leidick from The Daily Show.
Desi Leidick, correspondent for The Daily Show.
Joan Walsh from The Nation and NBC.
Joan Walsh, who you've seen on Chris Matthews every night for 10 years.
Yes. And Ashley Nicole Black from Sam B, who's also a friend of the show.
Another returning champion. Ashley Nicole Black was amazing last time.
Grab any of our pussies. That was a joke. You're not invited to grab our pussies.
So 8 o'clock Monday night, tickets are still available, but it probably will sell out because that is a stacked panel. Final program note is that we are doing a live debate show. We're doing a live election show night of the election.
Taking over UCB East all night, screaming results.
Starting at 8 o'clock, we're going to live stream election returns, and we're going to have commentary and bits. And as we have promised, if Hillary wins, we're going to lead the audience in a march to Union Square to celebrate in the streets of New York City.
Yes.
And if Trump wins, we're going to lead everybody to Port Authority to board a bus for Toronto. We're moving to Toronto.
Sal has offered to watch our son for us and find him a nice Republican family to live with.
Or shield him from the deportation forces that will come.
Because we can't take him to Canada with us.
So that's our housekeeping.
We're not chugging beers tonight
because we've been drinking the whole night.
What have we been drinking, Charlie?
Well, right now, the beer that I want to plug is that we've been most recently drinking
Barrier. Because we drink good beers on the nights we don't have to chug.
That's right. Barrier Suburb. Barrier is an amazing brewery. I believe it's in Long Island. And a suburb with a Simcoe single hop. And it smells like marijuana, which is how I like my beers to smell.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
I like dank beers.
Yeah, I get that.
You get a little dank bud out of that beer.
All right, let's move on to the politics. The beer portion is over.
Dank bud is like always the term a narc would use if he was infiltrating.
That's some real dank bud, guys. Where'd you get that cool dank bud? You're under arrest.
So we're drinking a little Mary Jane. So to introduce Sal a little more, he writes for Late Night with Seth Meyers, but specifically, I believe your department there is a closer look.
Yeah, that's right.
And you used to be a producer at MSNBC.
I did.
Yeah,
yes,
Sal is someone
who...
That
was my day job while I was doing comedy and stuff.
Boring.
I know.
That's right. You worked for Up with Chris Hayes, right? And then All In briefly as well?
No, not All In.
Okay.
No.
Just Up with Chris Hayes.
Up with Chris Hayes, yeah.
Yeah. And then he transitioned to working for Seth Meyers, and right now he's a writer and he writes... Honestly, not to flatter you too much, but I feel like the closer look segments are keeping me sane this election.
I feel like
Seth really is knocking those out of the park, and I know that you have a big part in those, and I don't know.
You're really nailing it.
Sanity maintenance is also where they come from as well. I'm also writing them to keep sane myself. So if that's what they're achieving, that's good.
To anybody who's listening who maybe hasn't tuned into Seth Meyers because it's on late or because there's 8 late night shows, go on Seth's YouTube channel and just watch the last few closer looks and you will realize how great they are.
Thank you.
But not this week because you guys are taking vacation this week.
We're on vacation.
Sal, all right, just initial reactions. We just watched the 90 minutes of that debate. How do you feel?
Well, as we were saying before, I feel relieved. I think, God, I can't believe... I'm just so happy they're over. Like, I'm so happy we don't have to feel the dread of preparing for another debate. What is Trump going to do? Who is he going to bring? Mm-hmm. Like, you know, is he going to bring Hillary's alien baby from the 90s? Like, what is he going to do?
No, she aborted that baby at nine months. Pulled that baby out of her vagina. Yeah, that's right.
We got to talk.
On the last day, she yanked that alien baby out of her womb.
Right off the bat, we got to talk about Obama's half-brother from Kenya in the audience. Huge impact on the debate.
Yeah, yeah.
When he stood up and when started monologizing.
When Trump called him out and said, Malik, my brother, you and I are brothers in arms in this struggle.
Don't you guys all feel so bad for Obama in that, like, we all have that family member that you're like, oh, shit, if I become president, they're going to find that family member, member, and you're going to be like, and no one likes that guy.
Not only have that family, we all have that weird family member who's supporting Trump for some reason.
Oh, like, of course.
So we all have our Malik Obama in our family. Absolutely.
So I felt like it started off super mellow. And in a lot of ways, it seemed like it was going to be boring in a good way. Like, I was like, good, we're finally going to talk about policies. But, you know, of course, Trump being Trump, he did have his moments of crazy in there as well.
Yeah, I think it's...
I mean, everything he says is crazy, but he was saying the crazy stuff in a different tone.
It's a real pattern, and I think... Maybe not the first debate he came out kind of strong, but definitely debate two and three, similar thing, where the first 30 minutes he was unrecognizable. Mm-hmm. Like, who is this man whose eyes are mostly closed and who is, like, whispering? And, like, it's like whatever the last thing that somebody whispered to him before he went on stage, whether that was Kellyanne Conway or his buddy Rudy, you know, just like, Don't let her bait you, you know, be calm, relax. Maybe somebody gave him a quick hand job backstage or something. But those first 30 minutes,
you're assuming,
like,
his penis can still get hard.
And I actually don't.
It's debatable.
I don't think that look is good for him, though. Like, his like really mellow and quiet. Like,
but can
I don't think that works either.
It's a great look for him. The best possible look for him, I think, is probably just trying to seem as normal as possible. But there's no great, because here's the problem. It goes against what we already know about him. Like, when he seems so subdued, that even though it's theoretically the best he could seem, for him, it's still not great, because it's like antithetical to what we know about Trump already and what his draw is, which is his celebrity appeal and his brashness, his provocativeness. Like, when he's suddenly like subdued and normal, on the one hand, it's good because it makes people feel like maybe theoretically he could be president. But on the other hand, it's like a different person. So nothing ever really works for him, because even the subdued normal Trump, quote unquote, is like weird, so weird and anathema to what we know about Trump that it seems like something's going on with him.
Yeah, you're at a Megadeth concert and it's acoustic for the first 30 minutes. And you're like, what is going on?
One thing that struck me when I was watching, and he was, you know, they started off talking about the Second Amendment. I realized something. I was like, Donald Trump, we all know he doesn't really give a shit about the Second Amendment, right? Yeah. Like, this man lives in a fucking ivory tower in Manhattan.
His sons like to kill wild animals.
Yeah.
Sure, but, like, no one's ever going to take their gun away, and he knows it. He doesn't care about being pro-life either. Right. These are things that he was like, yeah, red meat, sure, I'll say that. Mm-hmm. And you can tell he's not passionate about those issues, and he starts off mellow because he's like, yeah, this is what I think.
Yeah.
When he really starts to get heated is immigration, you know, economic and tax policy, that stuff, or people insulting him, that gets him passionate. But just talking about Second Amendment issues is just like, yeah, I want to have everyone have their guns. He doesn't really care.
Yeah, and he's also on record taking virtually every other position you take on those issues.
Absolutely. So anything social or, and I think
this
gun
is
control
guy,
is a social issue in a lot of ways.
Yeah, he totally. This is the guy who, like, to try to appeal to evangelicals, goes to, like, rallies and says, like, evangelicals love me, and, like, says 2 Corinthians instead of, like, doesn't even know how to cite, like,
I'm an
Bible
atheist,
passages.
And even I know that from the choir.
Corinthians 2.0 is really when they improved the software.
The
when,
second Corinthians
when
is
they
so,
got into
so much
the
better
cyber
than the first
of the Corinthians.
We wanted to talk about WikiLeaks briefly, and this is sort of outside of the debate, although WikiLeaks certainly came up. And I thought Hillary handled it pretty well. But just, Sal, what is your opinion in terms of how journalists should handle stolen documents, right? I mean, like, you know, I mean, is looking at John Podesta's emails as, like, ethically wrong as looking at naked pictures of Jennifer Lawrence because some hacker made it public? Like, just because it's public, does it mean that we all deserve to see it and talk about it?
Well, I don't know if those are the same, because that's like a very like deeply like what invasive.
What if Podesta had a naked picture of Hillary in his email?
Well, if
or himself,
that would be a game changer. That would be an October surprise. It's like, I think the way it's such a fascinating and difficult thing that we're going to have to grapple with, because now this is going to become regular. Mm-hmm. This is the reality. Like, this is what's going to happen to private corporations, individuals. It's going to happen to. It's going to happen to campaigns and political parties. I think, like, you have to. I think there's two stories. There is a legitimate story about who's doing it and why they're doing it, and then I think the journalists themselves can't necessarily ignore the contents of the stolen emails themselves. You can't just say, you know, because these are public now, but because they were stolen, I'll completely ignore them. You know, there's precedent for stolen documents in the past. Like, the Pentagon Papers were leaked illegally from by Daniel Ellsberg. So, like, there's precedent for people taking information in ways that isn't illegal and making them public, and journalists have to make tough ethical decisions about how much. I think the question is, how much are they in the public interest? There are a lot of emails in those WikiLeaks that are very unfortunate. They're about like people's personal matters. Yeah, and those are clearly not in the public interest, and we have to some degree trust journalists to make the decisions about whether they're in the public interest or not.
Trust journalists. Well, what I thought was interesting, so Marco Rubio came out today and said, we shouldn't respond to these as Republicans. Right. I'm not going to, and the Republicans shouldn't either.
Right.
And I thought that was, you know, 100% right.
Yeah.
In a lot of ways, it's like, you know, listen, nobody has gone in and looked at Trump's personal email. I mean, oh my God, can you imagine the stuff that would be in that? So I think he is right.
I mean, he ranks women publicly by the, can you imagine what his
exactly.
email? I don't think he actually uses email.
Yeah, though. He probably just dictates
I would be shocked
text.
If he used email.
No, I think that's true, that he doesn't use email.
They've said publicly he doesn't use email?
Yeah.
I'd be surprised if he did.
But my point is that I think that it is fair for the people on the other side to sort of like, listen, if the journalists need to put that out there, put the information out there, people can come to that conclusion. But you really shouldn't be too excited about those emails, because who knows is going to be who's getting it next.
And Marco said some nasty, dirty shit on his email account.
He has naked pictures of Hillary Clinton and his emails.
Yeah, I mean, there's probably different calculuses for politicians and for journalists. Like, politicians have to decide. They have certain commitments to, like, what the sort of national security agencies say and that sort of thing. And, like, journalists just have to decide, like, this information's public now. How much of it is legitimately in the public interest? And some of it is and some of it isn't. And they have to wade through that. But then there's also a separate story that people should – they're just – I think we have to just treat them as two different stories. Like, who's doing it and why is a legitimate story. And then also – journalists have to like look at the stuff and be like, well, how much of this is in the public interest?
Do you guys actually think do you think there's been anything damaging to Hillary in these WikiLeaks? Because to me, it just seems like affirming all of the shit that politicians say to each other or do. None of that is surprising to me.
It doesn't seem like there's been anything that I've seen, at least, that's more damaging than any campaign who might have a campaign manager or operative.
Yeah.
His email account hacked.
Yeah.
Like, okay. Yeah. She was strategizing on what her slogan should be and strategizing on how to handle the fact that she had changed her position a little bit on this or a little bit on that, you know.
And that they were in contact with, you know, with whoever decides when the primaries are, or the DNC. They were in contact with the DNC. None of that, and none of it's shocking. None of it's shocking to me. I'm not saying it's all above board, but it also seems like not. That's all of Hillary's scandals to me.
Yeah.
I'm not condoning most of them. I think a lot of them are overhyped, but a lot of them are just like, yeah, she's kind of doing what everyone else does, and she's the one who's getting called on the shit.
Oh, every campaign and every political party has emails of these kinds, of like discussing how their public positions differ from their private positions, how they're going to position themselves in terms of like strategically appealing to certain constituencies and voting blocks. Like, every single campaign and every political entity has those internal emails.
Yeah.
I think the thing with Hillary's emails is like, they basically confirm what we already knew about her, like, which would have theoretically been damaging maybe in the primary, for example.
Sure.
There were things about her public record for forget the private emails, were just things about her public record and her public positions that a large percentage of the Democratic primary base, it turns out, didn't like, and the people who voted for Bernie Sanders did not like. And the private emails, they don't reveal any new bombshells, but they just confirm the things that those people already suspected about Hillary Clinton. Her coziness with big banks. She tends to adopt their mindset when she's speaking with them, you know, that sort of, she, to some degree, in her Goldman Sachs transcript, she said it's like, there were political reasons why we needed to pass financial reform, and it was an oversimplification to say that that Wall Street was solely responsible for the 2007 crash. So those aren't surprising. We kind of already knew her proximity to Wall Street.
Part of that is good. I mean, what I like about politicians being politicians is they get shit done. I mean, that's part of the wheel of progress. Is it 100% right? No. But if we all stick to our morals and don't compromise or don't, you know, do a back, you know, a handshake in a back room somewhere.
Well, I totally
agree
with you.
Do you get anything done?
I totally agree with you about the email where she's like, oh, we do this for political reasons. First of all, everything in D.C. is done for political reasons. Yeah. Every politician does things for political reasons. The point is to, if you want to make change, change the politics so that people doing things for political reasons also happen to do the right things. That's what Bernie Sanders actually achieved, is that he changed the politics. So now if you're making politically expedient decisions, you might opt for, say, like free college tuition, as she did. Like, she thought it was politically expedient to adopt a position where she supports free college tuition for people, for families making under a certain amount of year. Like, Bernie Sanders didn't, she's not doing that because she's like, this is the noble right thing to do. She's doing it because Bernie Sanders' campaign changed the politics, and now she's like, well, politically, the best thing for me to do is to support this policy. So that doesn't bother me at all, like saying that people do things for political reasons. I think some people probably object to say, like, it's an for simplification, to go to Goldman Sachs and have them pay you, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars to tell them, like, oh, well, it's an oversimplification to say you guys are responsible for the recession. That probably people have some problems with.
So I want to move it from that to abortion, guys.
Time given to abortion.
There was a lot of time given to abortion, and I think this is, I mean, it's interesting that it hasn't been brought up before.
Yeah.
I think it's really interesting because I don't believe that Donald Trump believes anything that he says.
Yeah.
I mean, honestly, like,
no.
I wouldn't be surprised if 10 women came forward in the next week saying that they had an abortion with his child.
Yeah.
Because he was like,
I had to abort Donald Trump's baby and he made Mexico pay for it.
Exactly. I mean, this man just screams like backwoods abortion. anyway, what I really, really take issue with, Chris Wallace, who was supposed to be and I thought he did a pretty good job of being tough on both. But it bothers me that, and you could tell this was a Fox News debate when he came out and said the words partial birth abortion.
Right.
Which is a mischaracterization of a late term abortion and what it is.
Mm-hmm.
It's propaganda for pro-life people.
Yeah.
And then Donald Trump, I mean, he described this horrific thing like a day before a woman is get ready to give birth, they can rip the baby out. And what do they do? Strangle it? I mean, no, that's called giving birth. Yeah. You're 9 months.
Someone on Twitter said that is called a C-section. Yeah, you know, it's ridiculous. And I wish Hillary had brought up what Trump had said to Chris Matthews, which is that women who get abortions should be punished.
She did. Or, she said that.
Oh, she did.
Yeah,
say that
she
tonight?
Did.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes
yeah,
it's hard to remember, like, her interjections because he was so interrupty. Like, I didn't even remember that she said that. There were
She did. She tried to get it in, but, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, it's... It really bothers me. It's very few states do abortions after 20 weeks.
Yeah.
And
what's full term?
40.
Uh-huh.
You
wow.
don't remember we had a child?
No.
Like, oh, yeah, I remember all the weeks. It's funny that you brought that up because I literally
it's
just
so weird. I wonder why there would be a difference between the two of you.
Isn't that bizarre?
Of which of you? I was just hanging out.
Drinking beer. I was just shaping a human inside my uterus.
You make it sound like you were working on it. Like you were
I was like actively shaping him like a piece of clay. But, yeah, I mean, it is – this is not it shouldn't be a political issue. It's a very difficult decision for women to make to have an abortion after 20 weeks. The vast majority of abortions are done within the first trimester, and it's, you know, very, very hard decision to make. after 20 weeks. And usually it's because of the life of the mother or something horrific has happened to the baby. And also you have to, it's very expensive. It's very difficult to find a place that will do it. You have to go to another state in many instances. There's only a few states that will do it. So
she did a good job of pivoting, I think, and making that clear. That,
yeah.
That these cases are when the mom's about to die or the baby's already dead. I mean, in some cases, literally the baby's already dead.
The baby is dead.
Yeah. Yeah.
The baby is dead and they will not let you.
Yeah.
I mean, and that's the thing. The government will say if that's gone, that means great. Yeah. My baby's dead and I'm carrying it for 20 more weeks.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just a horrific thing.
But this is the crazy thing about having an election that has so little substance in it is like, this is the only time this will ever come up. Like, they don't get to litigate this. They don't go on the campaign trail and talk about this. Like, they don't, because it's so overwhelmed by other stuff. Like, there's no extended discussion of like, well, what is the truth of this like issue?
Right.
Like, what are the actual facts of the case here? And like, what is this candidate believe? And was that candidate? We got this one discussion, which was like surprising in and of itself, but like the facts of what you're exactly what you're saying will not be repeated or litigated by the candidates ever again, because the campaign is not about substance.
But this was the most substantive debate. Like, they actually talked about issues.
There were definitely times when it was substantive.
Yeah,
yes.
I mean, I'm not sure that Trump sort of like...
He word saladed about
issues. Answered a question.
He discussed issues and he just said
by saying
shit.
10 words related to the question until he found a word that sort of like hyperlinked him to his stump speech.
Yeah, back to the stump speech. Absolutely.
I want to say one thing. I speak Spanish. And not everybody might know, but hombre means men.
Mm-hmm.
And Trump laid out a really big policy of keeping bad hombres,
bad hombres
out of the country. What do you guys think? Should we be anti-bad hombre or pro-bad hombre in the United States of America?
Gee, I don't know, man. I just love all hombres.
Yeah.
So
it's amazing. Trump is like, when Trump thinks people can't necessarily hear his dog whistle, he exchanges it for a bullhorn. He's like, I'm talking about Mexicans right now. I'm talking about Latinos and Hispanic people, and those people are all bad people. Like, he'll just lean into the microphone and say, like it's incredible that he goes out of his way to make clear how racist what he's saying is.
I as if like hombre is an insult.
Yeah.
Like, you
also
know, you're just saying the word men, and there's some bad men.
Yeah.
I'm really shocked that he actually knew any word in Spanish, to be honest.
Well, he clearly got it from like it's got to be a lot, like a Clint Eastwood, like a Western or something, like some bad hombres came into town. Like, that's where he's heard that, clearly. It's got to be.
I also think he is a we actually talked about immigration, which was shocking, right? Like, they have not brought the wall up until this point.
Well, what was that with him saying over and over again that Hillary wanted to build a wall, but she couldn't get it done?
Because they have built sections of a wall in certain areas to stop, like I think they mean like around a border security point. That
there is
like
a security
a
fence, and there have been bills proposed and voted upon in Congress to establish a security fence along the southern border. Like, that's non-controversial. Not non-controversial. I should say there are people who debate that, absolutely. But I just mean in the sense that like that has literally happened. Those bills have come up. And Hillary, I guess, voted for them. Like, there have been piecemeal bills where it's like, okay, we'll vote for a wall if then you guys later vote for a pathway to citizenship. Like, there have been
a part of a comprehensive
debates.
Immigration negotiation
like
really
that.
Funny,
and Bush
like,
tried that in 2006, and it failed miserably because the right wing revolted. But
I thought that he had a really funny, like, he has a total misunderstanding of how immigration works. He's like, well, if this happens, we can't let these people who are waiting in line in because this guy snuck in.
He said, like, runs across the border and becomes a citizen.
Like, immigration isn't the line at the grocery store.
Yeah,
like,
it's
like this person walked in front of you. And it's not, that's not how it works.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, he makes it sound like if you don't get caught, there's like a reward. Well, you didn't get caught, so you're a citizen now.
And we got to put these other people further back in line.
Yeah.
Sal, real quick, I wanted to get your take, because you were pretty vocal about this during the debate on how Trump drinks his glass of water.
Oh, it's so weird. It's so funny to me. He holds it up in this way that's like, first of all, he holds it up in frame. So like, if you're watching the split screen, the water comes up from the bottom of the screen in frame, like somebody's holding it, like it's like somebody's operating a Muppet. Yeah. As opposed to like a normal person who will grab a glass of water and bring it to their lips and drink it and put it down. He brings it up and he squints his eyes like he's suspiciously sitting in a restaurant, like spying on somebody. Like he's, it's just so weird. It comes up from the bottom of the frame like this. And then he's squinting his eyes like, please, everyone, I think this is the funniest thing from the
Someone like make this a meme. But you know what also I think is funny? Like, Hillary never drinks the water, right?
Because someone told her, if you drink the water,
someone's going to say that you are thirsty and therefore you're dying of lung cancer.
Which, by the way, her health did not come up tonight. A lot of people were saying Trump was going to go hard on her health.
Yeah.
Trump did say that she was should be drug tested because I don't know what drug he's referring to, I guess. What was it? Steroids? Like, what is Hillary taking?
I mean... To be fair, she did what? Bench the podium today? Like, she did, like, what does he think is, what does he think?
He's the ultimate, like, projectionist, right? Like, whatever his shortcoming is, like, his shortcoming is he's terrible with women. So he literally says, I am, no one respects women more than me. And Hillary hates
women.
Can
he not find one single person that respects women more than him? Like, literally not, like, a single person.
What is going on in his head when he says that? Like, does he genuinely believe what he's saying? Has he rationalized him to himself? Like, I mean, what am I saying?
I haven't heard anyone call him on that. Like, I don't know if Chris Wallace would have ever done it or really Hillary. But I just think, like, when he says that specific line, which he keeps saying, I just wish some interviewer or Hillary would say, like, really?
I think they know it's so laughable
on
their face.
Wait, hold on. Really? In the whole world?
How about just that a woman respects?
Yeah.
Maybe she respects herself more. But also, it's a fundamental misunderstanding of what respect means. Like, I don't think he's like, no, I buy dinner for women. Are you kidding me? Yeah, I don't let them pay for anything.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, okay, that's what you think this is. You think that as soon as you buy women drinks at bars.
Yeah, absolutely. That's
that you respect
what he thinks
them. Great. That sounds awesome.
We want to talk about Russia a little bit. I think it is staggering that Trump is given so many opportunities by Chris Wallace, by everyone, to just say, like, yeah, Putin's a bad guy and Putin sucks. And he won't. And, like, Trump has had security briefings because he's a nominee, and he won't say that Russia is the one that is hacking.
Yeah.
Why? But why? Why does he think that's a winning issue for him?
He's so deeply emotionally needy that he can't reject someone who he thinks has said nice things about him. Like, if you compliment Donald Trump, like, God forbid ISIS ever compliments Donald Trump, because then, like, he'll cede the Middle East to them. He'll say, like, he can't, like, if you, just the fact that he thinks Putin is, which, by the way, has apparently been debunked, because Putin apparently called him colorful, which was translated,
like,
in some contexts as, like, bright or talented. Yeah. And even Putin backtracked and said, like, no, I just meant colorful.
I meant, like, he has an orange face.
Yeah, right. Which,
he's like a clown. Clowns are colorful.
Which apparently Vladimir Putin is concerned that Donald Trump is hurting his brand, which is, like, that's bad.
But you're right. You know, at the end of the last debate, he was so you can go back and look at it when they asked to say nice things about each other.
Yeah.
When she complimented his children, he was actually really just taken aback by that. And he said something very nice to her.
Yeah, absolutely.
And because he was like, oh, well, thank you. You're right.
You can totally disarm him by, like, complimenting him, because his ego just needs constant feeding.
So, like, so would that be a way for Hillary to, could it be a strategy that she could have implemented of just, like, Trump is a smart man.
Except
she's like, your dick is huge, Donald. He'd be like, well,
you're the best at grabbing pussies.
I think 3 inches is huge. Yeah. Thank you.
But he turns on people on a dime, too. I mean, you compliment him 1,000 times, you say one bad thing.
Yeah.
And he'll counterpunch you. But I don't know. It's fascinating and amazing that the Republican nominee for president, like, tonight, was praising Putin, was praising Assad, was praising Iran, and insofar as saying that these people are smarter than us, they've outsmarted us, they're stronger than us, and it's just shitting on America. Like,
well,
it continues to amaze me.
It's revealing, I think, because of the way that he thinks about political leadership, which is that he thinks Vladimir Putin is a better leader than President Obama because he has stronger control over
because
the socio-political institutions.
Yeah.
And exactly.
Yeah, he wins by 90%.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
He rigs elections so well. Like, he can't, like, so I think that's what it is. I think that's genuinely, that is, there are so few things that are actually, like, sort of, like, you can think of as Donald Trump's central ethos, but it really is the case that he genuinely prizes the general idea, the vague, ambiguous, but nonetheless real idea of strength above everything else. Like, and that's why he apparently thinks that Vladimir Putin is legitimately a better leader than President Obama.
So If that's the case, do you think because Hillary and Obama paid people $1,500 to attack people at his rallies, do you think that that makes her stronger?
So let's talk about this. I had no idea where that was coming from.
Also, we are so far gone in this election and in this debate that that was like not a big deal. That he claimed that the president of the United States and Secretary Clinton colluded and paid just random people $1,500 to go pick fights at his rally.
Yeah. So where does this come from, Sal? You seem to know that this is the James O'Keefe thing.
Well, I haven't watched the video myself, but my understanding from the reporting is this guy, James O'Keefe, who has done various sort of like
right-wing
sting operations that were like deceptively edited and so forth in the past, has video of some Democratic operative basically saying that they recruit people to go like disrupt Trump rallies. So I think that's where that came from.
Is it someone going, oh, yeah, well, we recruit people to like,
yeah, right, saying it. Yeah.
Saying it sarcastically.
This is a man who has made, like, undercover sting operation videos time and time again that 6 months later or 6 days later are debunked.
Yeah, absolutely. Shirley Sherrod, others have been like that.
Planned Parenthood.
Planned Parenthood. In fact, was he himself or was somebody else indicted in the Planned Parenthood videos? I can't remember.
Maybe.
He was
dressed as a pimp at some point.
He was dressed as a pimp, but that was Acorn, I'm pretty sure. I think he might not have been a Planned Parenthood. I think Planned Parenthood might have been a different organization and those people were indicted. But nonetheless, this happens a lot and he's one of those guys. And, I haven't seen the video, so I don't know exactly what the guy says. But
it's
that's
not something that's been on mainstream news, because this is the first I've heard of that.
It's just dumb.
And Trump was quoting it as if it's like everybody's talking about
this. Yeah, no. Everybody in his circle of Breitbart writers and readers are talking about it. But like that's the right-wing fever swamp that he lives in, where like he reads Breitbart and Drudge, and he thinks that that's what everyone's talking about, where it's not the case. Like they're not representative of what most people think.
I mean, that's insane.
Yeah. That is the where he gets his information.
Just the fact that was brought up in a debate. You would actually think that your opponent would pay somebody to go and start fights.
Well, we were talking about this before.
I wouldn't even think that of Trump.
Yeah.
I think nothing of him. I think he's a terrible human.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I don't know if I'd put it past Trump to I mean, like that crazy conspiracy theorist Alex Jones was paying people to go to Hillary rallies and scream Bill Clinton is a rapist. And Alex Jones is a conspiracy theorist radio host who Trump has a good relationship with. We were talking about this before. It's like he throws stuff out randomly without explaining it that no one will ever understand or remember. Like no regular voter is going to hear that and be like, oh yeah, I've heard that news story or understand what he's talking about or go Google it. Like you don't even, it's such word salad from Breitbart that nobody knows what he's talking about. Yeah. Like it doesn't get through.
There's two major things that we haven't discussed yet that I definitely want to talk about. One, he said she is a nasty woman.
Yeah.
That was an interjection. What a nasty woman. And so at the beginning, when they talked about the Supreme Court, the first thing that he talked about was Ruth Bader Ginsburg insulting him.
Yeah.
And how inappropriate that was. And he calls Hillary a nasty woman. I mean, he cannot take a woman criticizing him.
No.
He cannot take a woman saying anything bad about him.
No.
They're nasty. They're, disgusting. They're terrible people. It's just like, seriously, like, you can say Ruth Bader Ginsburg insulting Trump, whatever, but that's what you're going to bring up?
Yeah.
Like, whether or not that's a correct thing
or
not.
The question about, like, the balance of the Supreme Court and some landmark decisions that are definitely, no matter who's appointed to the court, are upcoming in the next couple of years. Like, such a momentous question, and specifically has such implications for his own coalition, because there are a lot of people who are voting for Trump solely and specifically on the issue of the Supreme Court.
Yep.
So, this holds a tremendous weight for even his own base and his voters. And the first thing he goes to is Ginsburg insulting him, like, 6 months ago? Like, how
this
long?
This old, old woman.
Like, it was the first thing he had to say about the topic?
Yeah.
That's crazy.
He's like, oh, Supreme Court, I think a woman insulted me on the Supreme Court.
And
like,
I love the way that he said that he would overturn Roe versus Wade. Well, it's going to happen because I'm going to...
He does this crazy thing of like dissociating himself from
what
will actually happen.
Yeah, it's not my fault that Roe versus Wade will be overturned. It's just that I'm going to you know, specifically nominate people who will do that, and then I guess it will happen.
And he kept also refusing to answer the question about whether or not he would want it to happen.
So when he said, "What a nasty woman," was that it? What a nasty woman?
Yeah. Do you think
interjection in the middle of Hillary's comment, and Hillary was, you know, being
to be fair, she was saying that he has small hands and he's a stupid fucking prick.
Hillary was challenging him as one does in a debate. But do you think, could she even do a comeback to that? Like, what would happen if Hillary had been like, nasty what? Nasty woman?
Yeah.
Like,
I think that's the kind of thing she's happy to let live on its own. Like, politically speaking,
I want her to do it, but it's probably not the best
exactly.
Move.
Yeah.
I guess, but I think, so he interjected several times, like he's been doing wrong.
Yeah.
You know, all that stuff. I think it makes her seem robotic, and that's part of why people don't like her, is that this man is insulting her, and I understand that you need to be, you know, when they go low, we go high, and you need to stay above the fray, and you need to just let that soundbite stand. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they understand politics more than I do.
Yeah.
But you do feel like you want this.
What,
like,
do you want
realness
her to say?
Her.
Not wrong?
No, I just want her to say, I just really want her to call him out and just be like, are you really calling the first presidential nominee, nominee of a party, a nasty woman?
I know.
And I'm currently insulting, I'm not insulting you, Donald, I'm talking about your policies.
But politically, they don't want, you want that cathartic sort of response, but they want you to feel the way you feel now. Because you're angry and you want to go vote right
fired
now
up.
If you could.
But do you think that some other people who are on the fence that are like, Hillary's a shill and she's just, you know, doing, she's a puppet and, well, she called him a puppet, but, you know, she's just doing what everybody else, like, you know, has no emotion. Do you think if she showed some emotion? At least once.
I think she showed plenty of emotion tonight. I mean, she said that she called, I guess it was about election rigging, that she called horrifying.
Yeah. Right?
Which is the next thing that we really need to talk about.
That's the big.
I think we all seem to agree, and early reaction that we've seen on Twitter and briefly on cable news is what people are going to be talking about.
That's the big headline.
Yeah, the big headline tonight is that Trump was given an opportunity to say whether or not he would accept the results of the election, and he said that he would keep us in suspense.
Yeah.
He'll make the decision day of.
Great. So now we get to live literally the thing that people have been mocking him for, that he made the selection into an episode of The Apprentice, is literally the case now that we'll find out in the final episode.
There's one more commercial before you know who gets fired.
He literally pulled a Ryan Seacrest American Idol on us.
Clearly down between Jen and Kwame. We got to take one more commercial break to find out who's going to work for Mr. Trump.
There are so many problems with our election. Mm-hmm. You know, you can say that we shouldn't have it on a Tuesday because that disenfranchises a lot of people that have to work. Mm-hmm. You know, we should make it a national holiday so everybody has off. Mm-hmm. Like, there are a million things you can say that we could do to fix our system. The one thing that you cannot say, there is no way that there can be widespread voter fraud in this country.
Yeah.
That
decentralized system.
Even, and that makes me feel a little bit better about the crazy, insane way we do all this. Like, you know what? It makes me feel a little better that Russia really can't change the outcome.
No, it is really funny that we have these, like, backwards election boards that haven't updated their, like, lever and pulley machines in 50 years. But that's why we're somewhat protected from hacking. I'm not really worried about voter fraud, but hacking.
It almost feels like sort of degrading in and of itself to, like, even have to respond to him with facts, like even to explain this feels like sort of like so lowering and so debasing. Like, we have to explain the basic mechanics of the American electoral process, which has worked basically as it has existed for 240 years, that every candidate who's ever run for the office of president of the United States has accepted the outcome, that we have to like explain this, that Chris Wallace was literally sitting there and explaining to Donald Trump the principle of the peaceful transfer of power. It was like such a debasing moment that this guy has to literally sit there and explain to Trump like this basic principle that is a cherished American institution.
I guess, like, you can say too, like, well, if the shoe were on the other foot, well, like, we know in 2000 the election basically was stolen from Al Gore.
Yeah.
It was. He won the popular vote. They stopped.
So you say it was rigged.
No, I'm saying I look back at how Al Gore handled it. And after that Supreme Court decision came down, even though people were upset, including myself, he said, no, this is over.
Yeah. I was mad at him when he did that, though.
Yes, I was. But now I look back, I'm like, you're right. What were you going to do? I mean, that's what our democracy is based on.
Yeah. What about
the branch? It's the respect for the branches of government, yeah. The respect for the process.
To further play devil's advocate, what about like in 2004 when everybody was all worried about Diebold voting machines and that was a big corporation and that the voting machines were hacked? I mean, I feel like there has been some there's been some examples of.
I'm not saying
like
we don't need to
being suspicious.
No, and I'm not saying we need to fix our system, and if it were close,
because it's rigged.
No, because I think there's no consistency, and I think I'm surprised that we haven't done it at this point. Things needed to be updated. You know, in 2000, the entire presidency came down to a couple people in Florida maybe not poking through their...
Choosing B when they meant to choose C.
Exactly. Yeah. So I do think, and as I said, there are a lot of things we need to change about our process to make it equal and more fair for everybody, but... The idea that this election could be rigged on a large scale is insane.
Clearly, there's no...
Well, it's the cabal of international bankers who are meeting with Hillary Clinton in secret.
Oh, my God.
What religion are those bankers?
Yeah, it's funny that you... I can't possibly imagine what those...
It rhymes with shoe.
It's so weird that, like, that's also... Like, what is he claiming? So he's doing, like, is it that he's claiming a bunch of weird, all sort of, like, conspiratorial, like, debunked things, but they're, like, different things. On the one hand, he tells his largely white voters to go illegally monitor polling places in quote, inner cities, like Philadelphia specifically, in Chicago.
You know the places I'm talking about.
Yeah, exactly. He says stuff like that. But then he'll say in a rally that this sort of, like, mysterious cabal of international bankers is working to rig the election.
Why didn't she rig it in 2008?
She had these bankers on her side.
I just don't understand if she was like, if they have so much power, why didn't she rig it to win the first time? Because she really wanted it in 2008. She would have been 8 years younger. And
yeah.
Another moment I love tonight is when Trump, and he's done this multiple times of like trying to say like, you know, your husband hates Obamacare, like trying to use like her biggest allies against her. Mm-hmm.
And tonight Michelle it was like, Obama.
Yeah, Michelle Obama hates you for some reason. I think he said in the last debate, but tonight it was like, you know, Bernie Sanders, blah blah blah. Bernie Sanders.
He said that you have terrible judgment.
Bernie Sanders says you have terrible judgment. I'm glad that Hillary finally just like, you know, completely faced him on that. It was just like, okay, well, one, who is he voted for president? Yeah. And two, he said you were the most dangerous person to ever come close to the presidency.
Yeah.
Like, what was he thinking? Like, oh, Bernie said one thing about Hillary once, so I'll bring that up.
Yeah.
Yeah. Also, like, every Republican running against Donald Trump said, like, some of the most vicious things I've ever heard a presidential candidate say. One of your rivals literally said you have a tiny dick, so, like, people say that stuff in the heat of a primary campaign.
Yeah, exactly.
So to pivot off of the debate a little bit while we have you here, Sal, I'm curious, what do you think November 9th is like for the Republican Party? What do you think?
Assuming she will.
Yeah, no, assuming that Hillary wins, like, what is the future of the Republican Party?
I think this is such a fascinating question. I'm not 100% sure, but I think all indications are that Republicans love Donald Trump. Like, people who consider themselves diehard Republicans, like base Republicans who vote in Republican primaries and who religiously vote for the Republican nominee every 4 years, those people love Donald Trump. Like, look at what happened to Paul Ryan. Like, Paul Ryan, mm-hmm. in the past 2 weeks, very subtly, in a way that was not pleasing to any person who's a Trump critic, like, came out and very quietly told his conference in a conference call that he was not going to defend Donald Trump anymore. He wasn't even revoking his endorsement. He just wasn't going to publicly defend everything that Donald Trump says. Paul Ryan's popularity with Republicans has fallen through the floor in the past 2 weeks in polls. Like, he's more popular with Democrats than he is with Republicans, I think. I'd have to look at them, but I'm pretty sure I saw polling today that said that his favorability numbers, he was a more net negative with Republicans than he is with Democrats now. Republicans like Donald Trump. So Republican Party is going to have to grapple with the fact that their base likes Donald Trump, but at the same time, the thing that Donald Trump represents is not enough to win a majority coalition in the United States in a general election.
70% of the Republican Party, but 38% of the country.
Exactly. Now, that's not to say I think the fear is I think ultimately what do Republicans do the next day? My fear is, and my cynical interpretation of what, my cynical expectation of what will happen is they'll immediately try to forget that Trump ever happened. They'll consider it a weird anomaly, and they'll go back to being unified around the fact that they hate Hillary Clinton. And they'll just talk about how much, which will not be hard to do. The next day, they'll all, McConnell will probably have another secret meeting the same way, like the one he had where they decided that their number one political goal was going to be defeat President Obama in his first term. And they'll probably do the same thing with Hillary Clinton. They'll just decide they hate her and that'll unify them. In terms of what happens to their politics, like, that's a really interesting question. Now, I happen to think some people think, like, well, maybe Paul Ryan's hoping that Trump's voters go away. I don't think that's going to happen.
No way.
And I can't imagine that there isn't going to be some calculating Republican who's going to come along and say, hey, there's a lot of voters there who like this kind of ethno-populist nationalism. Like, maybe I should appeal to that. Maybe
and
I should run on that platform in 4 years.
Yeah, that is the scariest thing.
Exactly.
That is the scariest thing. Someone could have all of Donald Trump's positions and do all those dog whistles or flat-out whistles and be that populist, Islamophobic, racist candidate, but not be like this, like, disgusting orange pussy grabber.
Yeah, yeah.
And could win.
Absolutely. No,
that's really scary.
I think that's legitimate. I think that's the legitimate fear. And I think Democrats, in response to that, have to develop a politics and a response that's stronger than the sort of, like, international, like, cosmopolitan finance capitalism that nobody likes, that even Democrats don't really like.
Because the Democratic Party...
Yeah, exactly. The sort
Democratic
of, like,
Party
Goldman-friendly Wall Street Democrat. Like,
we're not the Democratic Party anymore. We're the Republican Party.
Yeah.
And the Republican Party is insane.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, they've...
The Ku Klux Klan.
Yeah. Essentially, they've
succeeded.
It's
becoming the party of white nationalism.
They have succeeded in moving us so far to the middle that... You know, what we have, what we finally have for healthcare is a shitty Republican plan from 20 years ago.
Well, triangulating Democrats have moved us to that, too. Not just Republicans.
No, we've all done it.
Yeah.
Because the country moved that way, and we followed.
Let's be fair, the platform-wise, Bernie's popularity this year did push Hillary to the left.
Yeah, absolutely.
I don't think it's entirely fair to say that
the House and the Senate.
No, and that's a very good sign. And that's a very good sign. I think he's moved the politics, and I think it's pretty clear that the next generation of Democratic voters is going to expect the kind of politics that Bernie Sanders represents, which is very good because I think that's probably a much, because one great thing about this election is that it has put the lie to all the things that people pretended they believed in before this election started. Mm-hmm. For example, Republicans pretending that what they were really about was cutting the deficit and cutting entitlements to insure, or social insurance, as I call them, as they should be called rather than entitlements, like cutting them to ensure that they remain solvent, which is in itself kind of a myth. And that was a whole separate problem I had with Chris Wallace's questions, that they had embedded in them this myth that, like, Social Security is going to go broke.
There were some talking points that were supposed in a lot of
But what it proves is, like, even Republican voters don't fucking care about... they don't want Medicaid cut. They don't want Medicare cut. They don't want Social Security taken away from them.
They don't
want
Social Security.
Nobody wants the fucking Ryan plan.
Yeah, exactly. Nobody wants wealthy tax cuts for the wealthy. Like, Donald Trump proposed a $1 billion infrastructure plan. I will be fascinated to see if Republicans, whose nominee supported a $1 billion infrastructure plan, the day after the election say, we're ready to work with Hillary Clinton on that infrastructure plan that both of them agreed on.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
Nobody fucking cares. Nobody wants the Ryan plan. Nobody wants that ideological business-friendly conservatism. That's at least the one thing that this election put the lie to, that nobody cares about the deficit and nobody cares about.
And also, everyone cares about wanting, all of Americans are like, we want those good jobs back, those manufacturing jobs back. But guess what? You also have to be willing to pay $20 for
an old Navy pair of socks.
It's true.
Right.
Honestly, like, listen, you could say what you want about trade and whether or not it's good for the country. And I, there are pros and cons to that. I'm willing to pay more for nicer, or for things that are made in the United States, but that helps everybody else. But we've gotten addicted to the crack cocaine of cheap goods. And it's hard to go back from that Walmart era.
Well,
we're all hooked on that sweet, sweet sugar, and we're not going to go back so that someone's dad can get his manufacturing job back.
Totally, absolutely. But I think the real honest conversation that nobody wants to have is totally you're right that those jobs are not coming back. And in fact, that more jobs are going that way. Mm-hmm. And that's why we need a sort of like Bernie Sanders style discussion about like an expanded social safety net, because we need to have a society that makes collective decisions about like, what are we going to do for people who are out of the workforce because their jobs have been taken away by technology? And those jobs are not going to come back. And either globalization or technology, we can decide, well, we got to find some other, maybe they can work in retail or something. Or we can just say that we're going to have a safety net that pays for those people to live.
Guaranteed
like,
income.
Exactly. Like a guaranteed basic income, like that kind of thing. Like that's the kind of, and that's hopefully where the politics, at least within the Democratic Party, are going.
So given what we know now, and having seen three debates of Hillary versus Trump, there were a lot of people that were Sanders supporters that were arguing 6 months ago that Sanders would be much better equipped to debate Trump, right, and that Sanders would be a better candidate against Trump. Mm-hmm. How do you think we would have fared with three debates of Sanders versus Trump?
Oh, man, it's such a fascinating question. I think we were talking about this before. I think, but I mean, it's anyone's guess, but I feel like a generic Democrat would probably be doing a little bit better than Trump is.
But Bernie is not a generic Democrat.
Exactly. He has his own problem. I don't know. I mean, on the one hand, you have these polls, and they were trotted out during the primary as evidence that he couldn't be a good general election candidate, of like, people don't like the label socialist, and it mm-hmm. turns them off. On the other hand, I just feel like there's been so little discussion of substance this election, and I just feel like those kinds of labels, look at Trump, like, nobody cares about... Labels don't really seem to matter to anyone. Like, I don't think, I have a hard time believing, and this is just purely instinctual, this is anecdotal, I don't know if this is true or not, I just have a hard time believing that people still care in 2016 about a candidate who labels himself a democratic socialist. Like people who have, first of all, like, we're all much more familiar now through technology and through the internet and through social media with actual governments, democratic socialist governments that exist throughout the rest of the world. They're not crazy communist Maoist, like totalitarian states.
My biggest thing with Bernie supporters, and listen, I love Bernie. I voted for Hillary, mm-hmm. but I think Bernie is a great person, and he is equally as flawed, because what Hillary is doing is she's bringing in those corporatists, those middle of the road Republicans that can't bring themselves to vote for Trump, but are Wall Street guys. Think about all those people that live in New York City that are Wall Street dudes, right? Yeah. That always vote Republican, but are like, dude, I'm a college educated person. I know Trump is insane.
Yeah.
They would never vote for Bernie ever. They would never. Yeah. Those people are terrified of what Bernie wants.
Yeah.
Word socialist. It's what he wants. He wants to tax them, and they're right to be scared of him.
Well, I mean, for sure Hillary has more support from Wall Street than Bernie Sanders would. Absolutely. That's indisputable. I think that, though, the thing that he has that is very difficult is one thing that was very frustrating to the Clinton campaign and people who supported Hillary in the primary was that he was very unflappable in repeating his message over and over. And the reason is because it comes across as like, regardless of, you can debate the details and they definitely deserve to be debated, but just the way he talks about his proposals extremely common sense. Like, yes. He just literally says stuff like, why can't rich people pay for the rest of us to have free public college? And like, say what you will about the details about that, that comes across as a very common sense proposal that like a lot of people just occurs to them. Like my mom, who would never ever have considered herself a socialist in any context whatsoever, is like, yeah, like she paid for three kids to go to college, and she's like, yeah, you know what, why can't we tax the wealthy a little bit more to make sure that like kids can go to college, for example. Like that's like, that comes across as very common sense. Or like public single payer healthcare. Like people, once you get past the sort of label of socialism, which I think people clearly didn't bother as many people as it has in the past, like people think to themselves like, yeah, like if we're going to have this halfway Obamacare thing, why don't we just have the government make sure everybody can get access to free healthcare?
Yeah,
like, common sense
when
proposals.
Common sense to us, and I agree with all of it.
But when
I
we
just
have
worry,
the other but, half of the country is so, it thinks Obamacare is the worst thing that ever happened. When you say single payer, they think it's even like, it's unfathomable to them. And that was one of my criticisms of Bernie, and that's why I didn't support him in the primary. I feel like, I don't know, I feel like they'd both be in the same spot, honestly.
No, I don't think, I definitely think,
I don't think that he would have this landslide victory any more than Hillary.
No, I agree with that. And I think this, there's a lot of fantasizing about like which candidates would be better. And I've heard people say like, well, what if Biden was running against like Trump?
Sure. Actually, that probably Biden against Trump probably would have been a very,
maybe, but there's such negative polarization.
I don't want Biden to be president. I want Hillary to be president. You know, I mean, I'm excited that Hillary's going to win. I mean, I said this during the primary, so I guess I should admit this. I said that I was going to vote for Hillary because I didn't think Bernie could beat Trump. And I do kind of think that Bernie could have beat Trump.
I think Trump is such a historically weak candidate. This was our, I think,
oh,
there's
absolutely
actually a good,
Bernie could beat Trump.
Yeah, so you do think that.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Somebody, but you didn't think that 6 months ago.
No,
I didn't think that
no,
6 months ago.
No, here's what I thought. Yeah.
But I didn't know Trump was going to grab pussies.
Actually, I thought all along that they would be equally able to beat Trump. Because I think that millennials would have been passionate and excited to go vote for Bernie in a way that she doesn't have, but he would have lost the middle vote.
So you just ideologically aligned with Hillary more than Bernie. If you thought both of them were equally viable general election candidates.
I think my idea was that I might agree with Bernie on more issues, but I think she's able to get more things done.
I agree with that.
I am not a person that thinks we need to work outside the system. I think we need to work within the system. And for me, incremental change, somebody who is aligned with what Obama has been doing, which is incremental small change.
Here's why I'm skeptical.
I don't think that revolution that Bernie Sanders said, there's no way it's happening. Yeah. I'm from Ohio.
Yeah.
I spent a good deal of time in the South with Charlie's, well, not Charlie's family, but I'm just saying, in South Carolina.
Yeah.
People that live in the city and in New York are so cut off from what the rest of the country is thinking.
Yeah.
Those people are like the people that I grew up with, the people that, you know, we know and our extended families are so far different than Bernie.
But Bernie Sanders won primaries in Iowa and Michigan and places in Wisconsin.
Democratic
he won Democratic primaries, but those are Democratic primary voters who have previously never voted for candidates who describe themselves as Democratic socialists. Yeah. Like, and I will say the one thing that I was always skeptical of is this argument that happened throughout the primaries that Hillary Clinton would work better and get more things done, work better with Republicans and get more things done. What is the evidence that Republicans the next day after the election are going to be like, you know what, we should work with Hillary Clinton?
They won't work.
They weren't.
So it's the same. So they're in the same boat.
No, I think she's going to be able to mobilize more support in the Democratic Party.
She'll play the game.
She's gonna play the game better.
But what does that entail? What does that mean, playing the game better than him?
I'm sure we can play the game with executive actions, and
he can sign. Bernie can sign executive actions.
Yeah, I don't know.
I think having friends in the political system helps.
I have to say one thing. We got to wrap up.
Yeah.
But MSNBC and their Chiron right now in the room says, Trump says he will get, quote, bad hombres out of the U.S. And it's just such a funny sentence to say. Trump is going to get bad hombres out of the U.S.
And on that note, I think that perfectly sums up debate night. Sal, thank you for coming. Do you have anything you want to plug?
No, I don't.
Set your DVRs for late night with stuff.
Yeah, set your DVRs. You can also just watch it on YouTube. We put the Closer Look on YouTube every day. Staying up till 12:35 is hard.
Sometimes Closer Look is out before the show's even on.
Yeah, we do that sometimes. Yeah. When it's a hot one, we put it out early.
Seriously, Closer Look, Seth Meyers, Closer Looks have been some of the best political commentary this season. And
oh,
Seth,
thank you.
And Sal, we have you to thank for that. So this has been great. Come see our show on Monday. That's this Monday, October 24th, with Joan Walsh, Ashley Nicole Black, and Desi Leidick. What a stacked panel.
Like, subscribe, share.
Give us a rating. Give us a comment on iTunes. And
vote in midterm elections, everyone.
Yep. Good night, everybody.
This has been a UCB Comedy production. Check out our other shows on the UCB Comedy Podcast Network.